south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the one-of-a-kind show that tells you what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. It's a fact that millions of Europeans and North Americans have already made that big move south of the border. You might know someone who already has. Maybe it's your dream to do it someday. Well, it's a big move, and it's not to be taken lightly. And that's just what this show is all about. So let's get started. Well, I got a lot of emails in response to my last few shows about building and buying in Latin America. And some of you have pointed out to me that you want to build or buy, but before you shell out any big money like that, you like to come down and rent an apartment for a while, which of course is a great idea, and almost every expat does it that way. In fact, a lot of expats come down for the first time as exchange students or backpackers or maybe working for the Peace Corps or the Mormons or Habitat or a first world charity. Or you might have come down to party during spring break. It doesn't really matter how you got here the first time, but the thing was, you started loving it down here, and you decided to come back. And eventually, you came down thinking you were going to stay for some months or even a year, and that means you'll end up renting an apartment. Okay, so how do you rent an apartment down here? Well, it's a lot like renting an apartment up in the first world, but then again, it's not. And now I'll tell you some things about renting an apartment that you'll never read in a formal travel magazine, that's for sure. After all, this is the Expat Files. First of all, if you're set on renting an apartment in one of the more touristy areas, then be prepared to pay about double or triple of what you'd pay if you're in one of the Latin towns or cities that's not on the tourist track. So you have to factor in what you want to pay. For example, if you were in the city of San Pedro Sula, with its 500,000 people, the second largest city in Honduras, and it's a city that has everything imaginable, and it's only an hour drive from some of those great Caribbean beaches, which means it's definitely off the tourist track, but close enough to the Caribbean-style sun and fun you've always dreamed about. And you could hit those spectacular beaches any weekend, or someday scout around for a little beach house or cabana. Well, you could get a very nice two-bedroom apartment in a high-end residential section of the city, in a great area called the Zona Rosa, a mixed residential and high-end commercial area that's safe, has great nightlife, and has plenty of things to do. It's quite easy to get a nice two-bedroom apartment there for anywhere from $300 to $600 a month. In fact, an expat friend of mine spends $350 a month right now for a beautiful little place down there, and he's even got a swimming pool. Now, if you wanted the same kind of place in San Jose, Costa Rica, or in another touristy area like Cancun, or Playa del Carmen, or Veracruz, well, in that case, I guarantee you, you're going to pay double that. And in the first world, if you want something comparable, you're looking at paying triple or more. And the apartments that I'm talking about renting are not your thin-walled, cheaply constructed, assembly-line knockoff apartments, the kind that you see a lot of these days down in Latin America, the kind of apartments they call middle class down here, but that people from the first world would call borderline ghetto, and very few expats I know would settle for that. Though there is that small percentage of expats, that far out 5 or 10%, that are stuck in that old 60s hippie mindset and don't seem to mind at all living like the locals. And actually, I have a few expat friends that live that life, and they seem to be happy as clams. But that's another subject for a future show, so stay tuned. But we're on the subject of renting first world style apartments here. And down here, like up north, you can get your apartment furnished or unfurnished. And as most expats will tell you, a furnished apartment can be a big disappointment. Even if an apartment is quite nice and almost new and even well maintained, it's pretty much a given down here that if you get a furnished apartment, the furniture itself is likely to be in as good a condition as frat house furniture. And if you remember what that was like, well, it ain't pretty. So if you're the tree-hugging backpacking type and are used to roughing it, lounging around on disgusting furniture might not be a problem for you at all. Because if you've been backpacking through Latin America, you probably stayed at a lot of those youth hostels that share everything, including all the furniture. And if you've ever been in one of those places, you know that every beach bum and surfer dude has spent at least one night crashing out on the communal sofa. I don't want to gross you out, but you get the idea. The fact is, it depends on your own personal hygiene and cleanliness standards. Because like I've said in so many past shows, practically every house in Latin America, unless it's a brand new house, has a layer of dust and built-in grime that at first you can't really believe exists, because many of the people that you'll come in contact with have full-time cleaning ladies. So you wonder why they're not cleaning those obvious places that have got extra grime, like corners, windowsills, bathrooms, light switches, and sinks. I'm telling you, down here they really need a school to teach cleaning ladies how to clean. And I'm not being anal about this either. In fact, after being down here as long as I have, I'm the first one to cut these guys some slack. And I'm not just talking about lower class houses either. The hygiene standards compared to the first world are pretty dismal in every level of society. Because I've been in $1 million houses where they have bodyguards and multiple maids, and even multiple maintenance men, where the help is always cleaning and fussing, and yet the place looks like a 4-star hotel that's gone to seed. And one multi-million-dollar house I was in is a perfect example. The paint along the floorboards was all scuffed. A lot of tiles in the pool were missing, and some were peeling right off. There was the usual mold and mildew water damage on some of the ceilings. There were cracked glass panes in the dining room. And in the bathroom in my guest room, there's a line of termites on the wall leading from a wooden light fixture following down a straight line along the wall and ending up under my bed somewhere. Yuck. I'll bet you guessed that gave me a really good feeling about sleeping there that night. But getting back to apartment hunting, one expat friend of mine says, if you do get a place that's furnished, the first day you're there, make sure you turn over all the furniture and take a good look. And that goes especially for the sofas and the pillows and the beds. And he learned that lesson when he discovered there was a family of scorpions living in his living room sofa. And he didn't find that out for a couple of weeks until he came home one night and noticed a few cute little scorpion babies, each about a half inch long, scrambling their way along the floor, trying to get out of the light and back to the safety of their home under the sofa. Now that gives you a warm feeling inside now, doesn't it? And if you want to know where that happened, it was in Panama City, Panama. But it doesn't really matter where it was, because it could happen anywhere in this kind of climate. So, expat tip number 326, try to rent an apartment unfurnished. So even if you think you're saving money by getting a furnished apartment, you could be disappointed. Anyway, if you want to, you can really furnish a place cheap. And in most cases, you'll be able to pick up some cheap, good furniture for a few $100 and practically furnish your whole place. But if you really want to do it on the cheap, just go down to one of the local hardware stores or supermarket chains and buy some of that cheap plastic or pine locally made furniture that everybody else seems to use down here. But to me, that's too much like trailer court living. So I prefer, like a lot of other expats, to start out with one or two really nice pieces of furniture in the house, rather than a whole house full of pine and plastic junk. So like I said, it's about how much you want to pay and how much you can afford. And of course, how long you plan on staying in your new apartment. Okay, enough said about that. Let's go out and find an apartment. Let's assume right now you're not in a tourist area. Let's say you're in San Pedro Sula, Honduras. And let's say you've been doing things a little bit on the cheap, and you've been down there for a month and staying at a $25 a night 2-star hotel 5 or 6 blocks away from the upscale commercial center. And by the way, I have to tell you, those cheap 2-star, very basically furnished, but halfway decent hotels you see all over Latin America, well, they're probably owned by an Oriental couple, usually Korean or Chinese. And you can't get away from it. It's a fact of life down here. It's kind of like how up in the first world, it seems most of the 7-Eleven and convenience stores are owned by Chinese and Arabs. Now, what's funny about that is, all throughout Latin America, the Orientals have set up shop just like they've done in a lot of the low-income and minority communities up in the first world. The fact is, in Honduras, and even more so in Belize, it seems like the Oriental people own the vast majority of small hotels, 24-hour convenience stores, and a lot of restaurants. And yes, just like in the first world, the locals, in this case the Latins, look down their noses a bit at these people. And it's basically a physical thing about the way the Orientals look, and not much else. Though you won't see facts like that printed in any newspaper down here, because no one really wants to say that on the record. But I hear comments like that all the time at parties and things. And though the local Latins may not like the way the Orientals look, I never hear them say anything else about them, like they're stealing our jobs. I mean, things that certain people in the first world will say when Oriental people move into their neighborhoods, especially low-income neighborhoods. And thankfully, there doesn't seem to be much of that kind of antagonism down here. But there is a definite Latin prejudice against mixed Oriental romances down here. In fact, I've taken an unofficial poll among Latin women, and to a person, they've all expressed to me that they think the Orientals are an ugly race. And the last thing a Latin girl would want to do would be to choose an Oriental guy for a boyfriend. But the irony of that is, on occasion you'll be walking along and you'll see a young Oriental guy pushing a baby carriage, and alongside of him is a beautiful Latino wife. And in nearly 100% of those cases, his young wife was a beauty that he snatched from the lower classes. And that flies directly in the face of what Latin girls have told me in private. So why should that be? Because down here in the third world, marrying a guy with money, no matter what he looks like, is one of the few ways a girl from the lower levels of society can kick herself up a few notches economically. It's the same story everywhere. He who's got the gold rules. But for more on that subject, stay tuned, because in a future show, I'll be talking about expats that come from third world countries, like the Chinese and people from the Middle East. And believe it or not, there's quite a few of them down here. And by and large, economically speaking, they always seem to do much better than the average Latin, even though they start out without a lick of Spanish and with a huge culture gap. It's an interesting story, but I'll save that for later. So back to apartment hunting. Meanwhile, we're back in San Pedro Sula, Honduras, and you've decided you like it here, and you've got a few business ideas, and you've even hooked up with a lawyer. At least, you met with him once or twice. And your lawyer speaks English, and that's good, because most of them do. And speaking of lawyers, I urge you to go back to one of my previous shows, where I explain exactly how to go about getting one down here, and that should be one of your very first steps if you plan on staying. So like I mentioned, you don't know much Spanish, so what you'll probably do is you'll first go on the internet and do a Google search in English on apartments available in San Pedro Sula. Now that's a good place to start, and it's a way to see what you're getting, because on the internet, you usually get some photos, and maybe even some Google Earth aerials, and some shots of the neighborhood. But I'm telling you right now, you're going to pay a lot more for an apartment doing it this way than you'll ever pay by searching out the way I'm going to explain to you right now. Because chances are, in an internet apartment hunting search, especially in English, you're going to be going through a broker and paying fees. And the type of people we recommend you rent apartments from are not going to be advertising on the internet. Because the fact is, if you're looking to rent from people who are sophisticated about marketing and know how to make or post on a website, or even have a Google ad or a link, well, you're going to pay first world prices for that. But first, let's talk about renting an apartment on the cheap, because I know a lot of you are interested in that. I mean, I know how an expat feels when he just gets down here and he's just getting his feet wet. He's pretty cautious and doesn't want to shoot a big bankroll, at least until he gets the lay of the land. And don't worry, we'll get to you high rollers later, because there's always some people that want to go first class all the way. So what's the first step in finding an apartment? The best way to do that is get the local classified ads from the biggest newspaper. And the first thing you notice, if you can read Spanish, is that they always lump all the apartments together by neighborhood, which is very convenient and in fact a very good thing. Because you see, before you even look in the paper or make a single phone call, you're going to want to figure out which neighborhoods you want to live in and which ones you don't. Because in Latin America, it's all about the neighborhood you live in, and neighborhoods can be vastly different from each other in every way. So how do you know that if you've only been in a country, let's say, 1 month? Well, that's easy, because in the case of San Pedro Sula, there's only about 20 to 25 neighborhoods to choose from. And every neighborhood has a very strong and distinct reputation amongst the locals. And that's not something you can Google on the internet. No way. You need that info from an insider. And like I said, you should have a lawyer already, so what you should do is take a piece of paper and make a list of all the neighborhoods that are sectioned off in the newspaper under apartments for rent. And now that you've got these 20 names scratched down, you sit down with your lawyer for about 5 minutes, and he'll tell you which neighborhoods to avoid at all costs and which ones are very great and which ones mediocre. He'll know better than anyone which neighborhoods are safe by day and by night, which ones are the cleanest, which ones have the best roads, the best restaurants. Are the people there new money, old money, no money, or even narco money? Are the people cultured? Are they educated? Whatever. And of course, he'll have some idea of the price ranges for apartments in those areas. And believe me, this is a very important step, and you shouldn't skip it. Because all through Latin America, you could be driving and see a very nice subdivision. And you might even tell yourself you want to live there someday. I mean, it might be a nice gated complex with tennis courts and swimming pools and gardens. And the price might be great. And you might be saying, wow, this is exactly what I want. Give me a pen. Where do I sign? But the thing is, Latin American zoning laws are so weak, a really nice upscale project often ends up being built in a very bad section of town. And it's not only because of the zoning laws. You might have read that in Latin America, there's a lot of narco money sloshing around. And lately, all the international banks have put up really strong rules against money laundering. I mean, even if you deposit or withdraw a few thousand dollars, you're going to end up signing a ton of forms. Even you, a lowly expat or expat wannabe. So, with these new international rules coming online, the narcos are being squeezed out of money laundering through the big banks. And these narcos have so much cash that what they've turned to is massive building projects, which is another alternative way to launder money. So they buy up a big chunk of land and they build a nice project. And even if it's a huge upscale apartment complex, they can wait a long, long time. They don't really care how fast it gets occupied because for them it's a long-term investment. And as it turns out, they'll build their projects practically anywhere. And they nearly always build upscale projects. And they always look rather nice because they have the money to pay the architects. But those upscale projects can show up just about anywhere, from a nice upscale neighborhood where they fit in just fine to a low-end ghetto where the houses all around it are nothing more than tin shacks. And your lawyer's going to know about that stuff, and you won't. So back to that English-speaking lawyer of yours. Now, however sleazy you might think lawyers are, and whatever your opinion, your English-speaking Latin lawyer is going to bend over backwards for you. He's not going to steer you wrong. And even though you might have only had one appointment with the guy, he's looking at you as an investment. He knows nearly all expats start businesses down here, and that he'll be intimately involved with every aspect of that, because he knows you're going to need him. And he knows you'll probably build or buy a house or two, and he'll get involved in that. And he also knows expats pay their bills on time. You get the idea. So don't waste too much time worrying about him. 9 out of 10 lawyers won't rip an expat off. Not directly, anyway, because they don't want to kill the goose that just might lay the golden egg. In fact, as time goes on, he might not only end up being a good friend of yours, but he could end up being a partner in one of your new businesses. You never know. In fact, partnering up with a lawyer has happened to me 3 times already down here. And how did that work out for me? Well, let me just say, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. And I still have my shirt. Okay, let's get back to apartment hunting. Now that your lawyer has given you the lowdown on what neighborhoods are nice to live in and which ones to avoid, you're ready for step 2. And now you're going to have to suss out all those apartment ads. And if you don't speak Spanish, you're out of luck, right? Not really, because like I explained in one of my past shows, if your Spanish stinks, all you have to do is pay a visit to one of the local universities. And speaking of universities, practically every city with over 50,000 people has at least one. So finding one is easy. And then you go down to the university language department and you look for the student bulletin board. And you put up your own little announcement advertising for a student translator. And as you might imagine, in Latin America, 90% of the students in the language department at any university are going to be English majors. Because every kid in Latin America has been told 1,000 times as he's been growing up, the best way to get ahead is to learn English, the language of business and commerce. And I can practically guarantee that by the time you walk out of that university, you'll have already been approached in English by a college kid or two that would just love to be your translator. The fact is, you just might want a young kid translator like that tagging around with you almost everywhere you go. And normally, he or she'll be glad to do it, because they almost never get a chance to practice their English on a real bona fide gringo from up north. And if you don't speak any Spanish, a full-time English-speaking translator like that can really come in handy. And the best way to hire a person like that is to offer employment by the week or by the month. In other words, say you need a person to tag along with you for maybe 2 weeks, with an option to stay on after that. Well, in Honduras, I've seen the going rate for student translators like that at as low as $200 per month. And usually, if you ask one of them what they want to get paid, they'll really lowball it, maybe even $100 a month, because 99% of them have never even had the opportunity to act as a translator, so they don't know what the market is. Well, anyway, $200 a month seems to be the going rate. And being the good expat that you are, of course you'll buy your translator lunch and dinner, right? Right. And now you have a full-time translator and a guide to the ins and outs of the city for like $50 a week. And not only that, being a college kid, he'll know all about renting apartments, especially on the cheap. And he'll know all the details about the good, the bad, and the ugly about all those neighborhoods we were talking about. Such a deal. And let me repeat, you got him for $50 a week. The fact is, you could blow more than that at a ball game with the guys. But you know, finding an apartment would be a lot easier if you actually spoke Spanish. That way, you could do a lot of the hunting yourself, which might be fun. But here at the Expat Files, we're giving you all the angles, so bear with me. Now here's where I tell you again that you're at a great advantage being a person from the first world, because almost every Latin landlord I've ever met down here prefers a first world renter if they could possibly get one. Even though, because of the scarcity of expats down here, the vast majority of landlords have never rented to a first world person at all, they still have a great and positive mental image of us, whether we deserve it or not. Again, it's all about the persistent impressions that Latins have about first world people. That is, that we have more money, pay our bills on time, that we're quite honest and trustworthy, and are into care and maintenance much more than they are. And if we make a promise and shake hands on something, a deal is a deal. So we got that going for us. And because of that, if you give them a lowball number and show them the cash, they're very likely to accept, because they really want you as a renter. So let's say you found a nice place for $400 a month. And of course, just like in the first world, they're going to want a 1 month's deposit. And here's the thing I found out about Latin America. You almost never get that deposit back. As expats will tell you, most landlords will find a way to whittle it out of you. But there's a way to avoid that, save a lot of extra money, and sometimes not even have to pay a deposit at all. What you do is you walk into the place with 6 months' rent in your hand, cash. That's $2,400. Plus a deposit, which brings it up to $2,800. But here's what you do. You ask the landlord how big a discount he can give you on the place if you pay for 6 months in advance cash. And of course, in our case, since you don't speak Spanish, our translator will be making that deal for you. And I'm telling you, 95% of the time, a landlord down here will take that deal and give you a free month. That's because chances are your landlord never had anybody pay in advance before. It's just not that kind of culture down here. The Latins live from paycheck to paycheck and from week to week. And another reason he'll take the deal is that he also knows collecting the rents are just a pain in the ass, and almost everybody's not only a few days behind, they also write rubber checks all the time and don't even feel embarrassed about it, which is pretty much the status quo everywhere down here. In fact, getting a bounced rent check is so common that many landlords will go down to the bank or the guy that issued the check just to find out if the tenant has sufficient funds in his account before the landlord runs the risk of running that check through his own bank and picking up some carrying charges himself when it bounces. And if for the moment there are insufficient funds, the landlord will wait a few days and just go back down to the bank and repeat the process. So as you can see, there's a huge advantage to getting that money up front. And if you show that landlord your cash money, and I'm not talking about a check here, believe me, the landlord will always try to work out a deal with you. And that's also a very good time to try to work the deposit out of that equation. Just suggest to him that if you're paying all that money up front, there's no need for a deposit, because in effect, you're giving him 5 months worth of deposits. And usually, you can pull it off. Okay, now here's where your lawyer's going to come in again. Now, if you plan on staying in this apartment for maybe a year or more, I mean, your main plan might be buying land and building a house, but that's going to take at least a year. So now that you've made this 6 month deal with your landlord, you don't want to be at the mercy of this guy when your 6 month lease runs out. And about a simple lease, it's really necessary to sign one. And if your landlord doesn't have one on hand, your lawyer will. Anyway, you should have your lawyer draw up a 6 month renewable option. And that's meant to protect you when your 6 month lease is up and your landlord wants to shove a big increase down your throat for whatever reason he dreams up. And believe me, they got a million of them. And your optionals say, in Spanish, of course, when your six-month lease is up, that if you pay 6 months in advance again, you get the same deal with no increase. Actually, five, because you're getting a free month. And your landlord is sure to go with this, because again, he's hoping to get that cash money in advance. Now, when renting an apartment in Latin America, and I'm assuming here that most expats will want to be in a classier joint. Anyway, suffice it to say that down here, that just means you'll be renting something that's upper middle class or better. That is, according to Latin standards. And when you're in this upper middle class bracket, that $400 a month has now afforded you, your landlord, to protect himself and his property, will most likely demand a lot of paperwork from you, which you can't possibly provide. Not to mention, for this example, you don't speak or write Spanish. Anyway, you're an expat, so you probably don't have a job. You don't have a bank account down there. You don't have a local tax number. And you surely don't have a credit history down there. And you don't have a special document called Antecedentes Penales, which is an official document from the local municipality saying that your police record is clean and that you don't have any criminal charges pending against you. And generally, your landlord will also be asking for some personal written references, which you can't provide, and a reference from a banker where you've held a long-standing account, which you also can't provide, because even if you could, he wants it in Spanish. So that's the moment you're thinking, I don't have any of that stuff, so how the hell am I going to get an apartment? Aha! Now that's when your friendly lawyer comes in again. Because obviously, young people getting their first apartment don't have a lot of that stuff either. So how do they get one? They get a co-signer, called a fiador in Spanish. And in the case, for example, of young married couples trying to get an apartment, just like in the first world, usually the mom or dad becomes the co-signer. Well, in Latin America, the best co-signer in the world is your lawyer. And he'll be glad to do it because he wants you as a client for a long, long time. And there's really no risk for him because you're already paying 6 months in advance. So the landlord could never go back and ask your lawyer for money because the way you've done the deal and structured your option, you're always paying ahead of the game. And speaking of co-signers, it seems that there isn't a single expat I've ever met that hasn't been hit up at least once by a Latin pleading for his new expat friend to be a co-signer on a loan. And my advice is never co-sign for a loan down here. No matter how much faith or friendship you might have for that guy or girl asking for that big favor. In fact, I've got some sad stories of my own to tell you about that. But we're at the end of today's program, so that has to wait for another show.
South of the border, down Mexico.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. And don't forget, you can email me about any question you have about Latin America. That's TheExpatFiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
Thoughts ever stray south of the border.